Hall & Wilcox acknowledges the traditional custodians of the lands on which this podcast is recorded. They are the first storytellers of this land. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to all First Nations people joining us today.
Welcome to our new Hall & Wilcox Spotlight on Construction Law podcast series, which will examine the key topics that affect the construction sector. My name is Stefan Fink, and I'm a partner in the construction team at Hall & Wilcox. This is the first of two podcasts in which we are looking at whether there are any quick fixes that could be incorporated into construction contracts and that might reduce the risk of contractors going insolvent, and why this would be a good development for not only contractors, but also principals and owners and the construction sector as a whole. We're going to be focusing on two quick fixes. The first quick fix is advance payments to contractors at the beginning of the project, and the second is price adjustment clauses in contracts. For this episode, in which we will provide an overview of advance payment and price adjustment clauses, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague, Sam Kelsey. Welcome.
Thanks, Stefan.
Sam is a senior associate in our construction team, who has practiced in the UK, the UAE, and Singapore, and has experience of working with contracts that contain these types of clauses, being mainly contracts such as FIDIC and NEC. Let's start with advance payments, which are undoubtedly the simpler of the two clauses we will look at. Sam, can you tell us what an advance payment clause is and how it works?
Sure. They're quite simple, really. An advance payment's a mechanism whereby the contractor is paid an advance payment at the beginning of the project, which it then pays back during the course of the project, usually through a fixed deduction from its monthly payments. The payment's usually secured by an advance payment bond.
I think that's fair to say that the advantages for the contractor here are obvious.
Yeah, absolutely. But giving the contractor an advance payment, you're effectively changing the landscape from one where a contractor starts off the project in a deficiency regarding cash flow and the costs of project commencement, to one where it starts the project not exactly cash neutral, but certainly not as cash poor as it would have been without the advance payment. In my experience, this mechanism, when included in a construction contract, has greatly reduced the likelihood of a contractor becoming insolvent.
That's right. And I understand that in the UAE, where you worked for quite a few years, advance payments, especially on large projects, are commonplace.
Yeah, they are. The FIDIC Red Book is widely used throughout the UAE, and that provides a fairly simple mechanism for advance payment. Contractors would usually get 10 to 20% of the contract sum and what's usually a lump sum contract. It would then use this for either mobilization costs or purchasing materials or purchasing long lead items. But it wasn't just a mechanism designed to solely benefit the contractor. Well, it's common for the advance payment to be used to cover the mobilization costs, which are generally high in the UAE, as it's common practice for work camps to be built near project sites for the workers to live in while working on the project. I saw contractors using advance payment to purchase materials and long lead items at the beginning of the project. Doing this means it can buy them at a price which it's accounted for in its tender. This has the benefit for the principal that the contractor was able to better price its tender because it knew how much it was going to pay for certain material or equipment, and it didn't need to cost in as much risk into its contract price.
Yes. Price adjustments are a particularly hot topic at the moment, given the current economic climate we're in, and is something that we're going to discuss in a moment.
Absolutely. It also had the added benefit of reducing delays waiting for materials or equipment from overseas, as you could purchase these one in advance of whenever you needed them.
And that is a really big factor for projects here in Australia. There's also a more prominent understanding of principals and owners in the market, probably learn from bitter experience, I would say, that a contractor going insolvent partway through a project is extremely costly. Arguably, far more costly than it would be to give the advance payment at the beginning of the project and put the contractor on a better financial footing than it would otherwise be In that way, the costs of any delay and additional costs for a third-party contractor to replace the initial contractor can be avoided. Right. Turning now to price adjustment clauses. Can you tell us a little bit more about those, Sam?
Sure. These, in their most basic description, is a clause in a contract that provides for the contract price to be adjusted. They're called by different names: price adjustment clauses, price escalation clauses, rise and fall clauses, but they all mean the same thing: a mechanism whereby the prices of certain things, usually materials, is adjusted at a certain time throughout the project rather than being fixed for the duration of the project.
And how is the adjustment calculated?
There are different methods for calculating them, which we'll look at in more detail in our next podcast. But regardless of what mechanism you use, they all need to have the same three things: an affected component. This is the item, the cost of which will be subject to change, so the material, the labor, or the transportation. Something measurable against which the price increase or decrease can be based, which is using an independently published price index. And they need a reference date, the dates at which the adjustment is to be calculated. Usually there's a start date, which is either the tender or the contract date, and then a series of dates throughout the project against which the price will be assessed.
Now, price adjustment clauses have been around for a long time, but I think you would be hard pushed to find many contracts that contain them currently. I believe one has to go back to construction contracts as far as the 70s, when such clauses were commonly incorporated into construction contracts. This seemed to stem from a relatively long period of comparable low inflation and very predictable price developments in Australia. However, this has very much been disrupted and changed over the last year.
That's right. We have certainly entered a period of high inflation and steep price rises, in part due to the impacts of COVID-19, the war in Ukraine affecting supply chains, and the several severe weather events that Australia has faced in the last few years.
Absolutely. And again, as with advance payment clauses, they are often seen as just being beneficial for contractors, because as we mentioned earlier, the contract almost always carries the risk of any price adjustment. So why would a principal agree to them?
Well, I guess the first thing I should say is that while they are always thought of in terms of price increases, they almost always also account for price decreases.
I think it is also important to point out that not every dollar of a price increase or decrease is accounted for.
That's right. There's often an inbuilt buffer where not all of the price rise or fall is passed on, but only a percentage of it is. For example, there's a 5% increase in the cost of timber, but only 40% of that 5% is passed on. We'll discuss these mechanisms a bit more in detail in our next podcast. Some also have a trigger, so the price adjustment clause only kicks in once the price increase hits a certain point, either a percentage increase or a monetary value increase.
And I guess the same point stands as with advance payment clauses, in that including a price adjustment clause signals to the contractor that the principal is willing to share in some of the pain of the project, which arguably makes for a more collaborative working relationship.
Yeah, exactly. The same point also applies in terms of alleviating some of the financial pressures on contractors, which should in turn help to reduce the chance of the contractor going solvent, which, as we've discussed, can only be good for everybody.
Thank you so much, Sam, for your insights into these clauses, which are good for both contractors and developers, as well as the construction sector as a whole. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. As always, please get in touch with us if you have any questions. You can find our details on our website, which is hallandwilcox.com.au, or connect with us on LinkedIn. In our next episode, we'll be discussing how these clauses actually work in practice, and we'll be joined by a special guest, David Gibson, an experienced quantity surveyor with DJA. If you enjoyed today's episode, then rate, review, or follow our podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.